Hello, everybody, and welcome back to not only a brand new year, but a brand new episode of Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. That is right, ladies and gentlemen, and long-time or short-time listeners of the show, this is the brand new, very first episode of the 2025 season. This is the first episode of the 2025 season of Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, and boy, let me tell you, I am happy that you are here. A lot of things to get into, a lot of things to talk about. Right off the bat, I just want to hope, I would like to hope that everybody who's listening and not listening around the world had the best kind of holiday season they could possibly have. You know, whether that is a holiday season with family or with friends or both or just simply a loved one. Or you know what? If you're doing your own thing these years, these days, I totally understand. If you're out there backpacking in Machu Picchu, or, you know, going to the different little weed cafes and red light districts across, you know, Northern Europe. Hey, man, you know what? Whatever floats your boat, bud. If you're out there on a makeshift wooden raft with a pair of underwear turned into a kind of sail and you're floating across the Atlantic in the hopes that Moby Dick himself will lob himself from the ocean, from the ocean floor, from the depths, and swallow you whole. Well, you know what, bud? If that's what you want to do, and you've achieved that, you've worked towards that, going into this new year, then all you know, the more power to you. More power to you. And I hope everyone is happy and healthy and doing just the absolute best that they can. Being a new year, of course, you know there's bound to be people we've lost along the way. There's bound to be friendships that have gone different directions. There's relationships that, you know, sadly did not stand the test of time. But along with these endings always comes a new beginning. The end of a chapter is always followed by the next one. So keep your heads high. Keep your hopes high. Use your head to think and your heart for everything else. I can't claim that as my own line. There's a fantastic YouTuber who is a genius visual effects artist named Captain Disillusion, because he basically breaks down videos that try to lie to people to say like something's real, but it was really visual effects. And it's like an illusion and he disillusions them. And he always, at the end of his videos, basically, he debunks things that are said to be real but are obviously fake, explains how they're fake in a really entertaining and scientific way, and ends his videos with, use your mind, use your head to think and your heart for everything else, which I really love that line. And I think that's a very good way to, a really good way to push through your day-to-day choices and decisions and the way that you view your general state of being. So let's get right into it here. It is 2025, which means that this will be the year of a brand new comedy tour. What's funny is I'm talking about it now, but the dates aren't even announced yet. And it basically starts closer to the end of this year, but you know, better late than never. I think we announced the comedy tour last year in March. I think we announced in March, and it was in October. We haven't announced yet, but it's a lot bigger. The tour for this year is going to be, I think it's going to be 10 shows, 10 shows, 9 cities, maybe 11 shows, 10 cities, something like that. So a little more than double the size of the previous tour. The previous tour was 3 cities, 4 shows. So we did 2 in Munich. Again, we're going to do 2 in Munich on the new tour, but there's more. So I'm really excited about it and curious how things will play out. You know, during the holidays and especially just during wintertime, I don't, you know, tend to go out of my house as much as I should, which has its pros and cons. It can lead to more cons than pros, just emotionally speaking. Like, it is good to just kind of get out in your town and just see what's going on. But because I haven't done that so much recently, it is easy to forget that I have grown this online audience. Because occasionally when I do go out into the city, I'll get stopped or you know, asked to take a picture or something on the subway. And it's so rewarding. And it's funny now to be thinking about that I have this tour coming up and I haven't been outside to experience that in so long that part of me has this, not fear, but you know how you kind of lose that momentum of like, yeah, of course people are going to come. You know, I after this last tour, I was like, yeah, the next tour, no problem. Let's book it. And now we have a big one. So the pressure's on. And part of me is like, but are the people really there? You know, it's funny because I, you know, for most of my creative career lifespan, since I started, you know, performing or creating something artistic, you know, generally for some kind of money, I didn't feel like a general presence of recognition. You know, it's different when you get it from family or friends. You kind of expect that, or you hope for that at least. I would get some sort of occasional conversational, you know, praise or something with music. It's really a gamble. You know, that's something I don't miss at all. I've talked about this before, but like when you play a show or when you're an audience member at a show, you're going to applaud when the song finishes, even if you don't like it. And with what I'm doing now, what I'm focusing more on now with comedy, that's not the case. And I guess I just mean to spin that all together to say that now that the pressure is really on and I see these numbers online that are good numbers, it's, you know, it's good views and good follower count and everything's, you know, chugging along, it's still really hard to, because the work is all digital, most of it, you know, these videos online, it's very hard to tell like what of the audience is genuinely interested in what you're doing. Because also as a consumer of this content and a consumer of online entertainment, to the extent that it's probably too much, honestly, I see it through the lens of the consumer, where like I there's a few people that I've watched many of their videos, and you know I have liked or commented or followed them, you know, taken all the steps you probably would do, but maybe wouldn't have even paid an enormous amount of attention to if they had promoted like a merchandise product, or if they would have announced something they're doing. But I feel that shifting. I feel that shifting in myself now that I'm on the other side of that coin. For example, there's a very popular YouTuber that I like. His name is Curtis Connor, and he's a Canadian guy. I think he's like the last generation of millennial that you can be. I think he just turned 30 or 31. I'm not sure. Young guy, and he is a funny YouTuber. Basically, he does these like video essays. This is like classic for those who didn't grow up with YouTube like me. To try and explain it, like a classic YouTuber format is, you know, a person in talking directly to camera, talking to you with a microphone, and basically just sharing like well thought out opinions that are either sometimes very nerdy and in-depth about like a niche topic, perhaps like, oh, I watched all of Better Call Saul and then watched all of Breaking Bad, and here's my analysis of, you know, each episode and what, you know, what things connect and what Easter eggs you'll find upon the next viewing of da-da-da. So you can have like nerdy stuff that, I also enjoy that depending on the topic, but like a classic YouTuber like Curtis Connor is somebody who will, you know, he watches something like, I guess it's easier to say he basically chooses a topic and spends like 20-ish minutes usually breaking it down and more often than not making fun of it. So it's entertaining. It's well edited. Usually it's like a, you know, it's a nice camera. He has clearly written a script for it. Sometimes there's pre-recorded skits or songs or content that he incorporates into the video, so it feels like it's kind of always surprising and entertaining and engaging. Maybe he'll watch like a funny episode of an old, you know, early 2000s dating show that would never fly. It would never be made these days, and then like breaks down an episode and does like skits based on people's answers. It's maybe it is kind of hard to explain, but I bring Curtis Connor up because I to go back to this thing of like, now that I'm on the other side of the coin where I'm doing the content and I'm trying to push things that I'm doing, like the tour, I worry sometimes if people are more like me or not, where on TikTok I might just like keep scrolling and not really pay attention to if someone's pushing something they're doing outside of the internet world, or if they'll really like step up and do it. Because I was really surprised that this last tour sold out as quickly, especially as quickly as it did. And now with Curtis, he's a YouTuber that I like, and he does stand-up comedy. And I was kind of relieved thinking about my own attempts to promote the new stuff coming this year when I found myself taking the steps, the necessary steps to get a ticket. Does this make sense? It's the first one of the year, guys. I feel really rusty here. But I just mean like, you know, it's so easy just to keep moving through the content and not really focus on the person or what they're trying to make a career out of. Because like very popular TikTok people can just make money from the views. So you kind of can just keep scrolling and not worry about it. But if you're someone like Curtis, who has moved a lot of his stuff, he still makes YouTube videos, but he also, you know, has his stand-up comedy tour. I was relieved that I found myself being the consumer who would watch his video, and then when he brought up his tour dates, saw that he was doing a European comedy tour, and then paused the video, clicked the link, went to his ticket site, saw if he was playing in Germany, found the beautiful location that he's playing in Berlin, and bought the ticket. You know what I mean? And it wasn't extraordinarily cheap, but I was so, when I did it and I finished it and I felt happy, I was like, not only have I supported this guy whom I've watched so many of his videos. So it's like, not only have I supported a person who, you know, this is how they make their career, so I feel good. Like, yeah, man, you deserve this. I've watched hours of your hard work, like editing and script writing and whatever. But I also found myself as the consumer who's taking those extra steps. You know what I mean? So it gave me a bit of relief to think that maybe when I do announce this tour, and when we do talk more about the book and maybe even the TV show, that would be amazing. When new things come out, that there's a chance that there's going to be more consumers like I was for Curtis, where you step out of the comfort zone of just watching something and moving on, but actively go to the thing and like, you know, get the ticket. Yeah, that gave me some hope. Not that I'm not doubting the tour that much, but it's an uncomfortable position to be in. It's very naked. It's very naked to stand up on a pedestal naked, and you're just like asking the crowd, like, do you like me? Is this okay? Do you like this? It's cold. Normally it's different, but is this okay for everybody? You know what I mean? Like putting self-made creative content into any format, whether it's, you know, music or comedy or whatever. it's very soul-bearing, and I was relieved that the last tour sold so quickly. So I deeply hope that the next one will too. I mean, you know, even if it doesn't all sell out, and especially if it doesn't all sell out that quickly, I'm still going to be very happy if it's a, if, you know, if it's a profitable tour. Like if we, you know, because it takes money to set it up. It takes money to, you know, negotiate deals with these venues. It's a different system than you'd think. Like the way that I imagined booking a tour is very different from how it actually is. Like you're negotiating, like you're really negotiating deals with these venues. Cause you know, the venues, it costs money for the venue to host an event, right? Like this, it's a business based on hosting events, but for every event hosted, it costs them money. And I just never thought about that before. It's a building that takes electricity. They have employees, they're insured. You know, you have the cost of, you know, if they have a bar, keeping things stocked, if they have food, paying the cooks, you know, the ingredients, keeping things clean. If they have like, you know, custodial staff in addition to the normal staff, taxes, rental costs, like all that stuff. And it adds up quick. So you are like working with your booking agency to pitch yourself as a profitable act in these venues. And man, talk about standing on the pedestal naked. You know what I mean? Like, do you think people will come to see this? And thankfully, the last tour, you know, didn't just surprise me, but it surprised, you know, venue owners and the booking agent too. We were all kind of just like, whoa, okay, cool. Because it's expensive. That's kind of what I meant to say, was that it's expensive. So even if the new tour doesn't sell out, first off, at all, and if it doesn't sell out, if it does sell out, if it doesn't sell out even remotely as quickly, or even in completion at all, you know, like whatever spectrum of selling tickets it gets to, I just deeply hope that it's profitable enough to, you know, for my agent to get her cut and for no one to be in the minus. That'd be ideal. That'd be really ideal, because as long as we stay above zero, then I'm happy. Like I'm it's crazy to me to even imagine that I made some money on this last tour, because I've played so many different kinds of shows my entire life and I never made money. Never, ever, ever made money. And I mean, I'm talking about like you're spending money out of pocket to go drive to someplace to play a show, and then you're still splitting your bad pay three ways, because you got to pay your drummer, you got to pay your other musicians. You don't want them to, you know, play out of spite, or to, you know, you don't want them to hate you or quit. You need them. More often than not, they're your friends. So you want them to feel that everything's fair on the business side of things too. And yeah, it gets muddy really quickly. And it's benefiting me at this point that if the next tour is doing well, that I'm probably traveling alone again, maybe with one person just to travel with me and sort of document things for social media. That'd be fun. And just to have someone to talk to, honestly, I did like four, well, on the last tour, it was three cities. So I had two hotels. But still, you know, like you go to a place alone and you meet, maybe you meet with the booking agent. She was only at one show last year. And then you perform for all these people, you meet a lot of people, shake a lot of hands, and then, you know, take a little lime scooter with a backpack full of, you know, your merch or whatever, back to the hotel, and then you just go in and watch, you know, then in my case, watch YouTube videos on my bed till I pass out, you know, and then the next day take a train and do it again. And maybe next year I take a buddy with me, and, you know, we just share a room and watch YouTube videos together. How about that, huh? That might be the only thing. So hopefully if we sell enough tickets where at least we can be above zero, then I can afford to, you know, bring a buddy with me who can just, you know, film a bunch of stuff along the way. But yeah, that's exciting for this year. And also the book, you know, there's some updates on this. I don't know who knows, or if, you know, if you guys are just joining in for the first time, there is a book coming. I can't talk about it, I guess, too much. But it should be finished and out all in 2025. It's an unbelievable experience to be a part of. I'm very lucky that I have the luxury of working with a lovely agent slash former entertainment lawyer here in Munich that helped me negotiate the best contract possible with this this big publishing house. And it's going to be really funny and really cool and in two languages. It's going to be in English and in German. It's called a Wendebuch. So you can read one side, start to finish in English, but if you flip it over, it's the same book again, German start to finish. And that's really cool. That's really special. So I guess I don't know. I guess I can't talk about that too much. But we're working on the cover photo for that this month. And of course, I'm just trying to always kind of keep up with the writing schedule. And we have a manuscript due in spring. And then hopefully that book, well, the goal is that book, not hopefully, unless I die or, you know, that book will be out this late fall, and then I'll be able to take it on the tour, which is pretty crazy. I wanted to do a little side note here, and as usual, as I often do on this show, mention our longtime listener and dear, dear friend of the show and previous guest of the show, drumroll please, Moritz Binder. I think Moritz and my mom have been mentioned by me more on this show than like literally anybody else. But Moritz is currently, once again, I wanted to shout out to Moritz. He's currently once again in Los Angeles, because his film, September 5, the one that we had him on the show to talk about, it didn't win Golden Globes, but it is a Golden Globe, officially Golden Globe nominated film. Hey, come on, huh? Golden Globe nominated film. My friend, longtime listener, friend of the show, a guest, by the way, go back like three episodes, Moritz Binder, Peter Sarsgaard, great actor, one of the leads in the movie, Moritz, good friend, writer of the movie, funny episode, Moritz wrote a Golden Globe nominated film, and there's a lot of Oscar buzz around it, so it is bursting. The day this comes out, January 9th, is the day that it hits German cinemas. So go and see it, people. September 5. I'm so happy that I got to work on that. Congratulations to Moritz. He's in LA. He got to attend some amazing celebrity parties. And, you know, I don't know exactly the plan when they're going to announce nominations for the Oscars, but I think he'll be in LA for that too. We may never see Moritz again. I don't know. He's probably getting his toes licked by coke rattled whores. I don't know. You know, it's just, it's Holly weird. Okay. Moritz is probably having his tuxedo ripped off by the monkey that plays Robbie Williams in that documentary. Okay. Timothy Chalamet is probably rambling in his ear about the Nardwire interview. Okay. That one's a little too niche maybe, but, yes, Moritz, congratulations. Golden Globe nominated friend. And I dearly cannot wait for him to return to Munich, to come back to my game room where we can eat hot wings, he can indulge in his incredible stories, and we can play some video games together. Love you, buddy. Shout out to you. Congratulations on everything. You deserve it. And another really funny, totally different topic. Crazy switch here. I just got a very old friend back. I just got a very dear friend back in my life that I have not had in my life for many years, and it might be the oldest personal artifact from my old youthful days back in Mississippi that I still own, that I currently have in my possession. My mom and dad's have a good bit of stuff. I mean, I hope they haven't tossed it in their move, but they have a good bit of stuff from my younger days. But the oldest artifact that I own from my old days, I just got back. I'll explain it briefly, but I'm very excited. It is my very first own electric guitar that I bought for myself. It is a white hollow body. It's an Ibanez. It wasn't that expensive. I mean, I bought it myself when I was a teenager. It's a white hollow body Ibanez jazz guitar. It's at this big body hollow body guitar. And it's so pretty. It's actually still very pretty. You know, it's not the nicest quality materials, but it shines. It's this creamy white. It's got, you know, gold-plated Ibanez, you know. It's just so pretty. And that guitar has been with me through thick and thin. My God. That guitar was with me playing shows at Top Shelf Records as a teenager. I opened that package inside Top Shelf Records. I unveiled that guitar for the very first time in Top Shelf. It came with a brown leather case that opens up and has pink velvet inside, which I love. And I still love that the case has that. It's so pretty. It's a much cooler guitar than the kinds of things I can play. It does not, like, you see that guitar, you're like, dang, this dude's about to rip some jazz, huh? This guy's about to take us to riff town, like, and then you come in and I'm playing like, how many roads must a man walk down? You see that guitar and you expect it to be like, you come in and I'm like, you come in and I'm playing like, old man, take a look at my life as a long time. The answer, my friend, blowing in the wind. I was saying that like Randy, Randy Newman. Imagine Randy Newman sings like blowing in the wind. How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man? And how many thieves must a white dove sail before he thinks in sand? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Oh, God. I love that Randy Newman impression. You got a friend in me. Anyway, Jesus Christ. The guitar is way too cool for what I can do on it. Anyway, I got it back. I forgot that I had brought it to Germany, and it's just a cheap guitar. It's just aging poorly, doesn't play so well, goes out of tune all the time. And I had forgotten that I had given it to a guitar maker? I don't know. People who work on guitars. And I forgot that he'd messed with it a bit, but it basically was just like, this ain't worth the time and effort. Just get a different one. And I think it was like 2019, I got a new guitar, this blue Telecaster, which I love, which I still play with, and which is much nicer. And then Gideon is the name of the white guitar. Gideon stayed in the town of the guitar maker for, yeah, 5 years, 6 years. And finally, I brought him home. So welcome back, Gideon. I need to really get a soundboard here so I can play the applause. Like, welcome back, Gideon. Gideon's named after a My Morning Jacket song called Gideon, which is a beautiful, powerful rock song, which, not to get too sad, was played at a youthful group gathering after a couple of friends of ours in our very small town, unfortunately, took their own lives. And this was the, like, this first event together with all the mutual friends. It was like a campfire. Someone was playing this My Morning Jacket album, and Gideon, the song played, and my God, talk about just impactful, mind heart shattering, like, oh my God, that's what music is supposed to be. You know, we're just crying, all of us. And I got that guitar and named it Gideon after that feeling, like what music can make you feel. And yeah, welcome home, beautiful. I'm glad you're back. Glad you're back in my life. Don't know how much I can really use him, but he's so pretty. I think what I'm going to do is just put a little spot on the wall and hang him up just to drink in that juicy body every single day. Neck to toes, honey. I'm just gonna drink in that body. Mm-mm. If we was working at the office together, you'd call HR on me. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna drink in that juicy body. You ought to be working at Hooters, honey. Isn't it crazy that there was like a Hooters competitor company called Twin Peaks? First off, gross. Second of all, I cannot think of anything else except for that extremely odd David Lynch show. Odd in a cool way for the film and TV freaks out there. I like it. But it's not like a sexy show. It's a mind-altering, like, psychedelic mystery thriller about a girl who gets murdered. It's a weird, creepy show. And they're like, hey, man, Hooters is closed. You want to go down the street to Twin Peaks? I'm like, I don't ever want to go there. I don't want to see the dwarf man who speaks in reverse. I don't want to go to the Red Curtain Room with Kyle MacLachlan. You have to see the show to know what that is. But anyway, Gideon's back, and it's all very, very, very good news. And I wasn't sure if I wanted to dive into this next topic, but I feel like it's a good rant. I feel like I haven't gone on a good rant in a hot little minute here. So, I'm going to try and keep this, like, what's the good way to do this? What's the right way to do this? Let's start at the beginning, right? So I am insured. My health insurance is a company which, so ironically, is called AOK. Everything's going to be AOK, which they don't say that because they're Germans. So they go AOK, which sounds like you're choking on like calamari. And I hate them first and foremost. I hate them. So AOK Bayern is Bavaria is a company that is curb stomping their clients onto the sidewalks until their teeth shatter out of their gum sockets. This company is the worst company. I hate them so much that I... Dude, this is why I think this is a funny rant. I unloaded on some poor woman on the customer service line today to such an extent that I felt it's very important that I apologize to her and emphasize to her that it is not about her. And honestly, these people, they're so robotic. They're so like... customer service trained that I didn't even really know if she listened to me at the end of it. So I don't even feel bad. I don't even know if she heard me. You know what I mean? It wasn't, I'll explain. So I have had consistent issues with this public insurance for 3-4 years. I've been with them for a while. And I would, I'm not going to go into the whole system here. But, you know, it's like, it's the law to be insured. And, you know, there's different kind of deals you can make with different companies to have like cheaper plans. And there's like an immigrant plan I had for a while. I think it was like $30 a month or something. It was pretty cool. And then like if you have private because you're a freelancer or whatever, then, you know, that can be more expensive. And like in the States, it's a different game. It's like steeped, you know, it's you're dipped in like the capitalistic society. And it's a really tough society where you're paying like deductibles and you're like the insurance company sometimes denies a claim. And it's a really tough game where like it's a lot of money and you have to find people in your network and da 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 da. And like America, I mean, the United States is basically like one of the only westernized countries that doesn't do universal healthcare. And it's a really tough game. It's a really, really tough game and it can be so expensive. And that's why well, not most, but a ton of people just go to these like urgent cares. Because if it's something small enough, you can kind of pay out of pocket sometimes and just like kind of deal with it, suffer a little more to pay a little less. It's sad. But here, the big difference is like public insurance or private. And either way, you can pretty much just go to any doctor you want, and they all pretty much take everything. Like the only difference would be that maybe some doctors don't take public. Like I've talked before about doing this ADHD testing, and I recently switched from one recommended clinic to a different recommended clinic because the recommended one takes public insurance. Now, there's tons of different kinds of public insurance and tons of different kinds of private insurance. It's just the label of are you on a public one or a private one? And so you can still go to the doctors that don't take, you know, a public one, but you're paying out of pocket. And since I have to do some medical testing to continue with my ADHD testing, I left the one that would have charged me out of pocket and have applied for a new one that will, you know, talk to me about I've been in touch with the one that is takes public. Anyway, that's not important. The difference is, the point is that's what the difference is. The point is that is what the difference is. That there you are insured, and you know if you work, I worked at cafes, you know, I worked at like a little cafe, and that company pays your insurance. So if you have a job like even as a waiter, that restaurant pays your insurance, and you can go to any doctor pretty much. So and it covers like you know dermatologists, dentists, like all that stuff. So it's a great system. It is you know like of course if you're from here and you're from Europe, then of course you see different flaws because it's kind of like you know you just don't know what you got till it's gone kind of thing. Like coming from the States, I go like, oh, that's a problem that you know either way it's fine what the solution is, and here it's a big issue. But for me, it's like, oh, I went from you know literally just paying so much money. Because something wouldn't, or my parents really, honestly, like paying so much money out of pocket insurance-wise because something denied a claim or has a crazy deductible or some doctor's not network. It's ridiculous. All that aside. So, I mean, I mean to say all that because I just want to make it clear that I'm happy that I'm in a system that has insurance generally the way that this is, but AOK is just a steaming pile of dog shit because they have made it so difficult for me. I'll try and sum this up a little shorter now that I really drug out the differences between US and Germany insurance. But basically, I have been with them for a while, and a few years ago they started getting difficult where they're like, I was, you know, things were changing, my like addresses were changing. Home life situations were changing. Just a few like normal sort of standard routine things were changing, and it started getting kind of complicated with how much I was you know supposed to pay each month, and there was like a year and a half gap where because they were not doing their processing properly, I was paying the maximum that any like that humans can pay a company basically. I was paying like $1,000 a month for this insurance. I mean, and this was when I was still working at this school. I think it was like no, this was when I think when I had American Sunday. So I had it was like half of that income was going to the insurance basically. So I was really lucky for my general like situation in terms of where I was living and stuff, because otherwise I would not have been able to get by. And so I was paying maximum, and I'm talking about like hundreds of phone calls, right? All these phone calls to the company, trying to figure out what they need. Turns out they need this certain tax form from the tax office. I have someone who does my taxes for me, so I had to like kind of push my tax person to fight for this form. But there's nothing anyone can really do until the tax office has processed that form, and the form is for the previous year's tax return to show the insurance company how much money was made, blah, 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 blah. And it took so long to get that form in that I was just paying maximum, month after month after month after month. Finally, that form comes in, thank God, get it sent off, boom, process it, call them immediately. They are just like sloths, like in Zootopia. They just don't, they're processing, it takes forever. People are promising like, absolutely, Mr. Prince, we'll get that refund. Like basically they were like, you paid, you know, the maximum for X amount of months. And when we get this all processed, we'll know how many months you paid over, and we'll estimate how much you should have paid. You know, you're paying whatever, 900 something, something. Maybe you just owed like 100 something, 200 something. I don't know, just hypothetically. And then you'll get a refund for the money that you overpaid. So that was like a promise to me. That was an agreement from the company to me. You will get a refund for the unnecessarily high overpayments that you paid to us. Cut to whatever it is now, like 6 months later, no refund, no information. And then I get a letter in the mail from them, and they say, no one knows why. They don't even have any information why. But apparently I owe them money because there was like some missing automatic payments from like a 9-day stretch in September last year. And then like a month stretch in October, but then not after that. So I'm not really sure what happened. Also, first thought, if there's missing money in September, October, where's the phone call? Where's the email? They have this shitty online portal. Where's the information from them saying, hey, you didn't pay 9 days last month. Hey, you didn't pay October. Where's that? Why are they waiting till January to say anything about it? Unless the processing just takes that long. Okay, but if there's a gap there, but the money comes after, why is it on me to find out what this, can you just look at the system and see if there was like an issue with the bank? So, but the letter that came in that was expressing that I owed them money was, there was like a at the bottom of it, there was this huge, scary number of like multiple thousands of euros. And then I was freaking out, and this woman put me on hold, no joke, 13 minutes. No joke, 13 minutes on hold. I can sing you their holding song because it just loops. Anyway, trying to keep my cool, on hold 13 minutes. She comes back. She's like, yeah, because they had sent this form that's like this crazy amount of money, and then there's like these gaps missing. And she comes back. She's like, yeah, you haven't filled out this form that we need to know, so that we can estimate like your automatic payments that should come out to us, and to figure out why there's a gap there. I was like, okay, so the form that you mailed me is the form I should fill out and send out today? And she goes, no, it's not. No, that's not it. I'm going to send you another form through this online portal. And there's like 3 pages, and you fill all of those out and you inform to us why there's a gap, and we'll figure out how much you owe us. So not only did they send a form that I don't need, but they didn't send a form that I do need to figure out what the problem is. And I'm only finding this out now. So now the money is like racked up, evidently. And then I was like, well, do I owe you these thousands of euros? She's like, oh, no. These, you know, that money is like hearsay based on like if this, if that, if this, and if that. And part of me is like, why would you put such a scary number on a piece of paper if it's legitimately like not a realistic number that I should care about at all? If it's nothing that I should even remotely think about because I will not be paying it, why would you put that on this form? And why would you send me a form that I don't need? Why would you send me a form that if I fill this out and send it to you, it's not the right form? Why are you sending me a 3-page sheet over the portal instead of just sending it by post and instead of this garbage you sent me? Finally, we get this thing. Okay, you're going to send me this form. Then I say, okay, question number two is that I've been waiting for like 6 months to hear back about this refund you guys owe me. I've been told, I've been promised that there's a refund coming. I need to know how much it is. I need to know if it's coming. Do you need information from me? She leads it back to this form. Well, if you fill this form out, then we'll know, you know, how much money you've paid in and how much money you've earned, which, by the way, I sent that in months ago. That's the reason I had to deal with all that shit with the tax office. They have all of that. But now I have to fill it out again, and they're like, and then we can tell you if you've overpaid how much we might owe you, and that is where I lost my fucking mind. I unloaded on this poor woman so intensely, I hope she has nightmares. Now, granted, I know she is not Mr. A-OK Byron. I know that she's just a customer service rep. I even had the wherewithal to say, you know how you pinch the bridge of your nose, like, you know, I was like, look, I need to say something, but first of all, let me just say, I know that this is not your fault. This is nothing to do with you. I need you to understand that this is not directed at you. And then I went off. I mean, not really cursing, because I thought if I start cursing really intensely or screaming, she might hang up. Like, I need to continue this conversation. I still have things I need to know. But I was just broken by this fact that, like, how have I done so much paperwork over months and months and months and months and months, and all these phone calls where I've, like, been on hold 13 minutes at a time. That's not even the first time that's happened. Being told to call back 20 minutes later, 30 minutes later, an hour later, always doing it. It happens over and over. I called 4 times yesterday and eventually had to give up. And then, like, I'm going through this whole system today and it's still backfiring. And I basically was like, look, I know this isn't directed at you, but AOK is treating their clients like garbage. I feel like you guys are like curb stomping your clients into the dirt. Like, I feel like I've been scraping by. I was paying the maximum for so long. I was promised by one of your colleagues that this refund is coming. Now I have to fill out new paperwork. The paperwork that was necessary has not been sent to me. Apparently there was like a gap missing between my bank accounts for some reason, but I was not informed of that till now. So now money has racked up. I was like, this is really driving me crazy. I was like, this is not normal. I was like, I really don't understand how it can be this difficult to just have automatic payments to my insurance and that be it. And there was a bit of a pause, and then I got kind of scared, and I was like, again, it was much worse than that, but I don't remember everything. I kind of blacked out. I was like, please just know, I'm sorry. I need to calm down. This was not directed at you. Again, this is not about you. Please don't. I'm not mad at you. Please just understand that. And then she was like, don't worry, Mr. Prince. Everything's fine. It's okay. Don't worry. It happens. And I was like, oh my God, I bet people. If she says, don't worry, it happens to what I said, people must have called saying so much worse things. I was like, in my mind, I bet it does. I bet it does happen. And we got to a point where she was like, do you want to just set up an appointment at their office in Munich and go there in person? I was like, yes. And so we booked it. So the day after this episode comes out, I will be going to the headquarter office of AOK Bayern here in Munich. And by the way, the form that this nice lady said that she was going to send through my online portal to print out, she didn't send it. It did not arrive. So I don't know if you guys have ever seen that Michael Douglas movie, Falling Down, where he's like this corporate guy who finds that his life has no meaning and that everything is a joke and decides to like start taking people out with automatics. Basically, I've found the address that there might be some accidents. Okay. These are jokes. I'm not serious. God, these days you can't even make jokes about this stuff without people like reporting it. This is a joke. Don't do that. Don't incite violence. I'm going to go there and have a serious talk because I'm frustrated. Ay, ay, ay. But, my God. This company sucks. I got myself riled up. Didn't mean to do that, but I did. I did get myself riled up. Anyway, I'll end on a good note here. I will say, Once again, shout out to Moritz. Very proud of you. Very happy for you. We love you. The Artsy Fartsy family loves you. And guys, if you're not subscribed to the show, if you're not like if you're not following us on like on Apple Podcast or Spotify or wherever you're listening, please do a rating review. It really bumps this podcast up in the charts. It really helps newcomers find the show. So please do that. Please do that. It's free to do. It really helps us out. If you enjoy listening, if you had some fun, if you had some laughs, please. Rating, review, comment, anything like that, wherever you're listening, it really, 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 really helps. Thank you so much. And I'll mention again here at the end of the show, I have my very own Jordan Prince Ausfahrt to Hell hot sauce. It's delicious. I love it. Links in the show notes. And I'm loving my new therapy. So for anyone who's been questioning if they should start therapy or if they think they need therapy, everyone should go to therapy. It's amazing. I'm really discovering some amazing things through this work with my therapist that is just fascinating. As much as it is like difficult to face when you're there in such a safe, comfortable position and you're looking at someone who really like genuinely from top to bottom, just like their whole job is just to make sure you feel safe and to help you, then you can kind of like open that door more easily than you would without them. And my God, it's just fascinating. I love it. So I'll end the show with that. If you're questioning, if you've been wondering about starting therapy, if you live in Germany, there's a lot of therapists who are like, mine is on my insurance, my garbage insurance, but it is covered by insurance. So I'm not paying for this out of pocket, which is amazing. And in the States, you know, it's different. I know it's more difficult there, but if you've been thinking about it, and there's a chance for you to be able to do it where it's not going to, you know, rob you blind, definitely do it. Definitely consider it. And most importantly, like because this is the second therapist I've tried, and don't feel pressured to stick with the first one you find because you've worried that, you know, like it's going to look bad on you if you want to switch. It's very important to find the one that just works for you. And they understand that. And this is the second one I've worked with, and it's just like, so far, it's just a match made in heaven. So very good about that. Very happy with that. I'll keep you updated about the ADHD testing, about the book, about the tour, and about the AOK stuff. Thank you guys so much for listening. It's so much fun to get back into the game here. I love you, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye. Look out, baby. The Saints are.
Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von Jordan Prince und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.